you today is about the story of Jacob and Esau and how this story has shaped the way that I feel about myself, the way I interact with the world, and how I see the world around me. And Jacob and Esau's story, they are brothers. It starts with their grandparents. We had Abraham and we have Sarah. Now, Abraham and Sarah starts in Genesis 8 or 9, and they really struggle to have children. In ancient Near East, if you don't have children as a woman, as a family, your legacy is not continuing. Your lineage does not mean anything, and you're almost of no worth. And for them, they were trying to have children so hard and so long, but they couldn't do it for over about 50 or 60 years. And Abraham prays to God, says, God, give me a son, because I want my lineage to continue. And God's messenger comes down as an angel and says, okay, I will give you a son. And Abraham laughs a little bit, no, you won't. And he said, don't test God. Well, Sarah literally laughs out loud and says, no, how can I have a child? I am way too old to have a child. Well, God's messenger says, well, you'll see what happens. Abraham and Sarah have a child, and this child is named Isaac, which literally means laughter. So ironic in the Bible. They have this child named Isaac, and Isaac has a wife after this named Rebecca. And they have struggles to having children. For about 40 years, they're unable to have children. But then Isaac prays to God this prayer. Let's make sure this thing's on. Maybe we'll pray the prayer that this thing works. All right, there we go. So Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, since she was unable to have children. And the Lord was moved by his prayer, and his wife Rebecca became pregnant. When she reached the end of her pregnancy, she discovered that she had twins. Now, the first came out red all over, clothed with hair, and she named him Esau. Esau literally means red or red stuff. So he comes out a burly man out of the womb. I don't know what that looks like, but he's red. Well, then with the twins, you have immediately afterward, his brother comes out gripping Esau's heel, and she names him Jacob. Jacob literally means gripping of the heel. They take these things very, very literal. So we have Esau and we have Jacob. Now, Esau comes out as this burly man, and they begin to grow up, Esau and Jacob. And Esau is this very, very burly man. He's a man full of strength. He's your manly man that goes outdoors. He has bow and arrows and quivers, and he goes and hunts deer and lamb, and he hunts anything he can. He is this burly man. It's almost like he comes out of the womb, and he has blisters on his hands. Or he has, you know, when like these burly men have like back hair, and the back hair kind of like peeks out of their shirt a little bit. That's what I'm imagining Esau is, except it's red hair. So Esau is this burly strong man that loves to be outdoors. And the exact opposite side of this, we have this guy named Jacob. Now, Jacob is known as the one that's very introspective. He's very deep. He's very thoughtful. He's the one that's always at home. He's helping his mom cook. And even in Scripture, it says he has smooth skin. That hair, you would never find anything like that on him, except maybe on his head. So we have these two different people, Esau and Jacob. And for you parents, I don't know what it's like to have two or three children, but they had favorites. Parents, if you have favorites, don't tell your children. Kids, don't ask your parents. But Esau and Jacob had favorites. Esau's favorite was his father, Isaac. Isaac loved Esau to death. He loved going hunting with him. He loved the manliness of him. He loved it when he cooked stew for him. That was his favorite. He probably wouldn't tell Jacob that, but he knew secretly on the inside that was his favorite. Well, his wife loved Jacob. Rebecca loved Jacob. She loved being in the house with him, and she loved that he was deep and more introverted and much more doesn't like the wild, doesn't want to go tent or be hunter or anything like that. And that was her favorite. Well, through this time, they begin to grow up, and there are a number of stories that happen within birthrights and trying to figure out who's is who and how they go through. But we're going to jump to near the end of the story of Isaac. And Isaac has become very old at this point. And I want to jump into where he's become almost blind. So when Isaac had grown old and his eyesight was failing, he summoned his older son Esau. Remember, this is his favorite, and this is the firstborn son. And he said to him, "My son." And Esau said, "I am he." Esau's recognizing that he is Esau. He said, "Isaac, I'm old, and I don't know when I will die. So now take your hunting gear, your bow and quiver of arrows. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. Make me the delicious food that I love and bring it to me so I can eat. Then I can bless you before I die." So for Esau, and in this ancient Near East, you have this thing called a birthright. And a birthright is not something that just is, you know, you can do or not do. This is essential to the family. And the firstborn son always gets this birthright. And what the birthright entails is you are, if your father dies, you are now the king of the family. You own all the property, all the animals, you own everything. And the inheritance that you get, the money that they have, you get double the portion of any other child. You want to be this firstborn child. You want to be Esau in this particular case. Now, for Esau to get the birthright, in any ancient Near Eastern family, for you to get the birthright, you would have to cook a meal for your father and partake of a meal together. And then your father would place hands upon you and bless you with some words and some phrases and prayers. And you would be given that birthright. And the whole family would then follow you. No longer they follow Isaac, they would follow you as a person. So Isaac is trying to give this birthright to Esau. Well, something happens that the favorite, Rebekah, overhears this, that Isaac wants to give this to Esau, and Rebekah's not very thrilled about it because her favorite child is not getting the birthright. So she goes and tells Jacob, hey, this is what occurred. Your brother's going out hunting. He's using his quiver and bows, and he's going to find an animal and kill it, and he's going to fix a stew for your father so he can have the birthright. Rebekah says, well, we're going to do something different. Rebekah is very cunning and conniving, and almost that's where I think Jacob gets a lot of it. So she says, this is what I need you to do. I need you to go to your brother's room and find his clothes and put them on. Now, again, we have Esau, who's this bigger guy, I'm imagining, and you have Isaac, who's this scrawny little dude, and he goes up, and he grabs the clothes, and he puts the clothes on. And they probably smell pretty bad because he's a hunter, but he puts the clothes on. And he asks, well, Mom, what are the plans? She's like, well, I need you to go and grab the two goats that we have, and I want you to kill them so I can fix the stew just like your brother is supposed to do. So he goes and he kills the goats and he gives them to his mom makes a stew. Well, then Jacob asks, well, what if my father touches me? Jacob is kind of weary. He wants to become Esau, but he's like, my father's going to recognize that it's not my voice and he's going to recognize that I'm not hairy and don't have back hair growing out. So he says, well, what about if my father touches me? So she says, well, don't worry, we'll take care of that. We'll take the goat that you just killed and we'll place it upon your arms. So when your father feels your arms, he'll know that it's Esau and not Jacob. So they do all of this. They do these three things. They get the clothes, they cut the goat, they kill the goat, and then they put the goat skin on him. And this is what happens. This is fascinating to me. So Jacob goes into his father. Now, I'm imagining if you were Jacob, Jacob is wanting to be Esau. Jacob doesn't want to be himself. He wants to be the firstborn. And I'm imagining him with this oversized cloak-looking thing that smells really dirty. He has this stew in his hands. And he's probably shaking a little bit. And he has this goat skin that's on his arms that makes him feel like he's hairy and he's really not. And he's probably shaking to death because you're going to your father trying to deceive him that you are Esau and not Jacob because you want the birthright. He wasn't happy with his position in his family. So he's probably shaking to death. And his mom is all in the process like, yeah, this is what we're going to do. So, I mean, even my knees are shaking a little bit because that's what I'm imagining. This is what it says. Jacob went to his father and said, my father. And he said, I am here. Who are you, my son? Who are you? He's asking Jacob. Well, Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your oldest son. I've made what you asked me to. Sit up and eat some of the game so you can bless me. He's trying to get this birthright. Isaac said to his son, well, how could you find this so quickly, my son? Remember, he just told Esau, go out and hunt game. And if any of you all are hunters, it is not something you just go out and find a deer sitting there and you shoot it. It takes a while to find these wild animals. So how could you find this so quickly? Isaac is already trying to begin like, oh, I don't know if this is true or not. But he said, the Lord your God led me right to it. Jacob again is trying to convince his father that he's Esau and God is a part of this. So Isaac said to Jacob, come here and let me touch you, my son. Are you my son Esau or not? Isaac is kind of recognizing, maybe he says an Esau. So Jacob approached his father and Isaac touched him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the arms are Esau's arms. Isaac didn't recognize him because his arms were hairy like Esau's arms. So he blessed him. He gave him the blessing. He prays over him, but he doesn't fully give him that birthright yet. He asks one more time. So he's already asked him once, who are you? And he says, I am Esau, your oldest son. He asks him a second time, are you my son? He says, yes, I am. And then he says this, are you really my son Esau? And he said, I am. Jacob has been on this process. He was somewhat scared to begin with of becoming Esau. And now through this conversation, through this dialogue, through the eating of a meal together, he has become Esau. He is no longer Jacob. He wants to become Esau. And he said, I am. Well, then he gives him the blessing. There's a big song and a big story in there about how he places his hands upon him, and he can smell the cloak that he is wearing, so he knows that it's Esau, and he blesses him. So there you go. He has the birthright. The whole family has to follow him. Well, remember, Esau is out there in the wilderness hunting. When Esau returns, he does what he's supposed to. He finds the game, he cooks it, he makes it into a stew, and he goes and talks to his father. Now, obviously, this is going to be some trouble. His father's going to realize, well, who is this? Didn't I already give my son Esau the blessing? And he shakes terribly because he recognizes that he has no longer given it to Esau, but he's given it to Jacob, who has become Esau. And Esau is, the real Esau, is furious. Now imagine if your brothers or sisters have stolen something from you, it's like a hundredfold, because this is something that you cannot repair. This is something you cannot replace. This is something that your whole family is now following Jacob and not Esau. He is furious. And he yells out, I am going to kill my brother, Jacob. I'm going to kill him. Well, remember, Rebecca is very conniving. She's very deceitful. She kind of hides around this corner, and she can hear that Esau is going to kill Jacob. And remember, Jacob is her favorite. So she says to Jacob, Esau is very upset. That's an understatement. And he wants to kill you. I want you to go and stay with my brother Laban. Go to this other space and go stay with Laban until Esau begins to quiet down. And he leaves. So we have three chapters after this of a lot that goes on. Jacob gets married to Rachel and Leah, and then he has handmaids of Zilpah and Bilhah, and they have 12 different children. If you have not read the story of Jacob and Leah and Rachel, it is the most interesting story I think I've ever read in all of Scripture, because it's a crazy, messy family. You should read it. But we're going to skip over that. So we have this next section where Jacob is with his wives. They have left Laban. They have left the comfort of their homes, and he is now out in the wilderness because he's forced out by Laban because of that whole story. And this is what happens. He's out in the wilderness, and he leaves his wives to go by himself. So, but Jacob stayed apart by himself, and a man wrestled with him until dawn broke. This is the story of Jacob wrestling with God, or an angel. When the man saw that he couldn't defeat Jacob, he grabbed Jacob's thigh and tore a muscle in Jacob's thigh as he wrestled with him. Well, the man said, this is God. God said, let me go because the dawn is breaking. He did not want Jacob to know that he was wrestling with God. But Jacob said, I won't let you go until you bless me. The Bechorah, that's the Hebrew word is Bechorah, that birthright. There's a connection between these two stories. He said to Jacob, what's your name? What happened in the earlier story? Who are you? Not once, not twice, three times. And Jacob normally would say, I'm Esau, I am he. But what does he say to God? He said, Jacob. And then God said, your name won't be Jacob any longer, but Israel, because you struggled with God and with men and won. Jacob recognized who he was, and that's when God was ready to do work with him. That word Israel means wrestling with God. And it literally means when God changes Jacob's name, we have work to do. That is where our entire heritage comes from. It's from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, which is known as Israel. In this whole story, Jacob is always asked, who are you? Who are you? And how he responds is how he feels about himself. He wasn't happy with who he was as Jacob in his family. So he said, I am Esau. I am your oldest son. And he moves from that to say, I truly am he. He doesn't even use Esau's name. He uses, I am him. And it's not until he wrestles with God four or five chapters later that we get Jacob recognizing himself as himself. He no longer wants to be this person or that person. He no longer wants to feel like he's somebody different than himself. He recognizes him as himself. So I know there are some things that we don't like about ourselves. We aren't happy with ourselves at times. And even culture kind of helps us with that. So we have this thing. So I got off Snapchat maybe a couple years ago. But Snapchat has this thing that you can take a picture of yourself or others, and it recognizes faces. And if you tap on the face on your phone, you can slide over to these things called different filters. And you can put crowns on people and make them sound like llamas, and you can make them have bigger faces or smaller faces. It's really, really interesting. But there's one filter that really stuck out to me, and the filter is called beauty. Beauty filter. And what this filter does is it makes your face, it recognizes your face and makes it prettier to what culture says it should be. So for a woman, it changes four things. It changes the size of their eyes, it changes the height of their cheekbones, it changes the way their nose looks, and it changes the color of their lips. So over here on the left, you have a normal picture of a woman. Over here on the right, we have this beauty filter. We have this beauty filter. And what does that say about us? We say, this is beautiful, but inherently, and sometimes subconsciously, we say, this is not beautiful. By naming something else beautiful, we are saying something else is not. She might not have been happy in herself. Are we not happy with ourselves as times? Do we not want to go by our own name? But even later on, the iPhone 7 came out, and we have normal lenses, and they're normally 35 to 50 millimeter lenses, and they're normal lenses, and sometimes you know the saying where a camera can put 10 pounds on you, when you take a picture, like, I look a little bigger. Well, humanity wasn't so happy about looking bigger. So with the iPhone 7 Plus, they added a second lens. It's called a telephoto lens, and it's no longer 50 millimeters that adds kind of weight on you, but it makes it look almost fisheye, so it makes you look thinner. That's crazy, because what does that say about us? We want to be thinner. And this is what the GIF of it looks like. Where you start is the smallest amount of millimeter right here, and then as the millimeter gets larger, it makes you look larger. So what we've done as a culture is we're not happy with ourselves, we're not happy with the way we look on camera, we're not happy with the outside appearance, we are not happy with ourselves. And that's the first idea. We're not happy with our external selves. We're not happy with the way we look in the mirror. We're not happy because we don't look like this person or that person, that we don't have those six-pack abs or this voluptuous body. We're not happy with ourselves, are we, at times? But it goes even deeper than that. And the thing behind the thing is our internal struggle. Sometimes we're not happy with the way we feel about ourselves. We're not smart enough. We're not kind enough. We're not caring enough. We're not intelligent enough to do that or this. Sometimes we struggle. And what does that say for us about how we view God? It's deeper. It's a theological. It's not an issue of self. It's a theological issue. Because when God created us, how did God create us? Beautiful and wonderfully made. God made us in the image of God. And if we see ourselves in our very being, that we are not worthy of this or we are not worthy of that, we feel ourselves as fake. We are tainting the image of God in which how God would have us to be. We are not happy with how God has made us. And when we shift from that of saying, I am Jacob, I am Will, that's when the work begins. To not be other people. God was happy with Jacob a little bit, but when Jacob really recognized that he was Jacob, that's when the work started. That's when God changed Jacob's name to Israel and created this heritage of Hebrew people. It's only when we recognize ourselves and understand that we are beautifully and wonderfully made that God is ready to use us. I'll share with you one of my favorite writers and authors and communicators and podcasters is a guy by the name of Rob Bell. I love Rob Bell. I love the way he communicates. I love the way that he kind of perpetuates ideas and makes me think. I love what he does. And it started with Pneuma videos. There are these videos he made that he would preach sermons for 10 or 11 minutes in the background. And as this was going, he would create these videos of something else occurring. So he would talk about stillness, and he would have a video going on about stillness in a dark room. And there are these videos that portray his sermons in video form, in almost an artistic expression of these sermons. And I learned so much from him of how he portrayed his sermons in an artistic form through video. And it wasn't just him speaking. It was something that was going on within the world, a thunderstorm, a musical instrument, a bullhorn guy. He would be speaking through this. And I really loved the way he did that. And then we move on to his podcast. Every Monday morning, he has a new podcast that comes out. And he'll range anything from sermons to his ideas on the world to his interviews with people. And I love the way he questions things. I love the way he ruminates upon how things work and how things tick. And then he writes books. One of my favorite books is What is the Bible? How an ancient library of poems and letters change and shape the way I think and feel about everything. And I read through this book and I was like, man, this guy is good. This is deep. But if I'm looking in depth at myself, if I'm looking at me, sometimes I'm like Jacob wanting to be Esau. I'm like Will wanting to be Rob Bell. But God doesn't call me to be Rob Bell. God doesn't call me to do podcasts or make Numa videos. God calls me to be me. And when I accept myself as me, when I say, who is my name, and I say, my name is Will, then God has work for me to do. I know we've all felt it before. Sometimes you feel like a fraud. Sometimes I feel like a fraud up here. What am I to speak up here? Or I don't feel worthy to say this. I don't feel worthy to be doing this. My boss is much smarter than me. Have you all felt this before? Sometimes you feel like you're a fraud and you're fake. But God doesn't call you to be somebody else. God doesn't call you to be your boss. That God doesn't call you to be your mentor. God doesn't call you to be your teacher. God calls you to be you. To be you. So when somebody asks me, who are you? I have to be me. I'm not going to be Rob Bell. I have to be Will Wold, the enthusiastic, energetic, energizer bunny at times. Because if I'm not, we don't have any work to do. I have work to do on myself. But when I say I am Will Wold, yeah, we have work to do now. We have things to do. And that's what God wants. So when somebody asks you, who are you? What do you say? Do you put up these external things of Snapchat and beautify filters? Or use your telephoto lens on your iPhone 10, iPhone X? Or is there something internal that goes on that says, I'm not worthy enough, I'm not intelligent enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good looking enough, I'm not creative enough, I don't have the best mind capacity to be like that person or this person? That's self-deprecation. That's being mad at God for God creating you. So when somebody asks you, who are you? What do you say? What name do you give? Let's pray.